And the first 95 issues, as you said, are Riverdale, and then something happens. There's an explosion. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Rivervale comics.
Yeah. And he sees the page of him reading a page of him reading a page of him reading a page, like, infinitely. So he sees himself reading the comics.
Yes, that's right. And that was great. That was a great scene, and it was weird and creepy.
Yeah, that's kind of what you're waiting for in an episode like this.
Absolutely. Hello, pals and gals, and welcome to a very special episode of XOXO Riverdale. I'm Louis Perlman.
I'm Kate Vatter.
And this is your favorite Riverdale fan podcast hosted by two grown-ass adult comedians that really shouldn't be watching the show, but have made an absolute pact with Satan to We signed the contract to just be doing this together until the day we no longer are on this earth.
Yeah. We're going to actually, when the series ends, we're going to start from the beginning again, and it's going to be different takes. And then when we finish, we're going to do it. Like, it's an endless loop.
Yeah. It's an endless loop. Like what happens in this episode.
Yeah.
Cause today we're talking about chapter 100 of the show. There've been 100 episodes of this bonkers show.
We hit syndication,
the Jughead paradox. What 100 episodes, the Jughead paradox. If you like what you're hearing, you can subscribe to us on any podcatcher of your choice. You can follow us on social media. You can reach out to us. Some people did last week about really wanting an explanation for the time jumping episode last week.
We hope we explained it, but did we?
I don't think so.
We tried our darndest.
We tried
a little more than the episode did.
So before we get into chapter 100, is there any big Riverdale news this week, Kate?
So I'll start, we think we might have the same news. I'll start with the other news, which is that I thought for about 10 seconds that Cole was in Saturday Morning Action All-Stars or whatever, the Kyle Mooney show.
Yeah, which I'm really excited to watch.
It was Dylan, but he's in Saturday Morning All-Stars. It's a Kyle Mooney show.
I can't wait.
A Kyle Mooney show.
I love a good old Kyle Mooney joint, let me tell ya.
There's so many to choose from, so.
I'm into it. I'm excited about it. I'm actually a big Kyle Mooney fan.
It vibes with Middle-Aged Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. I wish it was more like Brigsby Bear, but you know, such is life.
I haven't seen Brigsby Bear, so it might.
Brigsby Bear is great.
I hear only good things.
Yeah, that's awesome. And your other news?
My other news is that in celebration of the 100th episode, we saw pictures from the screen tests of the stars, and they're all tiny little babies.
Yes.
And it was very nice to see. They had some nice cakes, but I really enjoyed the screen testing.
I thought the screen test pictures were definitely one of the best posts. I believe that post was by Cami Mendez, who wrote a really cool, I thought what she wrote about for that Instagram post is worth noting, just the amount of gratitude she expressed for really coming right out of acting school and booking that job right away. And I do think that that's something interesting to remember about these actors, is that what an absolute godsend to them to book a show like this that ends up lasting 100 episodes in such an early stage in their careers.
Yeah, it's
interesting.
I was listening to Rob Lowe talk about how he got cast in The Outsiders.
Yeah.
And how he basically got it out of a failed sitcom and Coppola losing too much money on Apocalypse Now. So like he stumbled into it through a bunch of awful things. And I didn't read what Cami wrote because Instagram is for reading.
Or Instagram is for looking and not for reading.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I just thought it was, I thought it was well put. You know, I think she's a smart, you know, interesting young woman. Oh God, I feel so old saying that. But I do, I think Cami Mendes is cool. And then she ended the post by basically saying, and get ready for our 100th episode. It's absolutely bananas in true Riverdale fashion, which also just shows the fact that, like, I think all the actors on the show really understand as much as we do how bizarre the show is at this point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are certain, speaking of her performance in this episode, there were certain moments that I thought she was really good and certain moments where I think she was literally shouting through the scenes to get them done as quickly as possible.
It feels like when Mark Consuelos first joined in season two, it was like fun. You could tell he was like excited to play the villain. And then, like, based on his social media, by like halfway through season three, he was just like out here to have fun with friends.
Totally.
And like,
having fun with these nice cast members. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, he just like would roast KJ Apa nonstop. And it's like, good for you, dude.
Yeah, totally. Like, that's all pretty adorable. Yeah. So it's interesting. And it's interesting to think about the amount of cast members that have come through the show as well. Mm-hmm. And who returned for this episode. And, yeah, you know, who wasn't invited, at least for this episode. Like, I know that last season we had that wonderful episode about Josie and the Pussycats, but mm-hmm. I was a little surprised to not see Ashley Murray in this episode. It's okay. Like, that isn't even a criticism. I was just like, oh, that, you know, who's going to come back, who's not. And then, of course, Marmaduke Moose Mason, where was he?
I was going to say, like,
you know, where was he in that sequence in Pop's Chocolate Shop in Heaven? Wearing a tiny bowler hat the way that he does in the comics. Like, come on.
I was like checking the names as they come up in the credits, but I only noticed like halfway through when it hit Lachlan Monroe. So I was like, oh, maybe I missed him. Maybe Moose is coming.
And I was going to bring up Lachlan Monroe because I thought it was really nice to bring him back in a capacity where he didn't have to just be so fucking awful. You know what I mean? Like, that was nice to see like the good version of that character at Pops do that little speech. Yeah.
And there was one return that I wasn't expecting that was the most fun return.
Oh, well, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
Ooh. So overall, I mean, let's talk about this episode. Overall, did you enjoy it? How did you feel about it?
I feel like you're right with like Cami Mendes. It felt like there was a lot of phoning it in this episode. Minus one scene where KJ was once again absolutely incredible.
I know, because he's great. Yeah, totally.
Like, there was his delivery. I was like blown away, especially compared to everyone else. Like, oh boy. So I think I could have liked it more, but it's fun. I'm happy to see a storyline come to a real conclusion.
Ish. I mean, sure. Yeah.
It felt like they're not going to open it back up.
Like, well, that certainly did feel that was the case, but that doesn't necessarily completely coalesce with actual conclusion, I would argue, you know?
Yeah. It's their own way of concluding a storyline.
Yeah, totally. Yes, it's in a true Riverdale fashion. We will not hear from Rivervale ever again.
Yes.
Like, yeah. I overall liked this episode quite a lot. I'm going to say right off the bat that I found it so hilariously confusing and quite convoluted. And as someone who has, you know, as you know, I've wanted them to do some sort of parallel reality episode on the show for a really long time. I was excited for them to explore it. I do feel like there have been elements throughout the entire series where they've been somewhat hinting at it. However, certainly not to the degree that it was all exposed in this episode. And that being said, you know, I was thinking specifically about this is a little putting us on a pedestal, but just like our responsibility as like recappers of this show to explain what happened in each episode. And I did really find the ending to this episode pretty hard to really understand what they were really saying or going for.
It feels like every time an episode is confusing, did you watch like the first season of True Detective?
I did not. No.
Like the whole thing is like you're watching it and the it's like the similar to the end of No Country for Old Men, where like some dude is just talking for a real long time, so you start to zone out, and then suddenly like it ends and you're like, oh shit. So you never really know what's happening until like the very end of the last episode. And it feels like that in a bottle here, where like the whole episode is like they should have been explaining it better as they went along, instead of suddenly being like, oh, people might not get this, and like blowing it through a single sentence.
Or this could have been, I actually think this could have maybe been a 3-episode event, where there was more crossover between the Riverdale characters, the Rivervale characters, and perhaps some other versions of the characters as well. You know, almost make it like a little mini, you know, crisis on Infinite Archies, you know, for lack of a better term. Because, to really explain the concepts of parallel universes and how it's going to work within the context of Riverdale, and then do it all within an hour, it was stuffed real hard. And then also having an actual plot to the episode and trying to do a lot of super fun fan stuff, which it did succeed in, which I thought a lot of it was quite fun, but, you know...
Yeah, there was some stuff, and then like I also felt like they wanted us to just trust them at certain points, and it was like, I do not trust this character,
and also I don't trust this show. Because in the past they've you know dicked us around so much. All right, and let's get into it. Scene by scene.
So Archie's alive.
And Jughead starts this episode by saying this is not an imaginary story, which is a real comic book conceit. Not imaginary story. This actually happened. Everything counts. This is canon. And then we get into it and sure. Okay.
Everyone had the same dream. Betty had the same dream as Archie, and Reggie as Veronica, about what we have seen so far in Rivervale.
Yes.
But it's very confusing because then we find out, I assume that they woke up in Riverdale then, but we still woke up in Rivervale. So they dreamed about exactly what happened in their actual life the day before.
Yes. Yeah. And then they just had any possible thing happen for the rest of the episode and just say, well, this is a pocket universe that's unstable. And it's like, okay, fine. So, you know, I guess what that means is, if I'm trying to do my job as a podcaster and as a geek of this sort of stuff, because, you know, I am a big fan of like these sorts of stories, especially like DC Comics, which this borrows heavily from, like this episode. So this is a pocket universe where there's time anomalies happening and where there's reality anomalies happening, where there's jumping around in time, and certain characters are somewhat displaced from time, and then also the reality is shifting drastically as the show, or as the universe tries to catch up with itself.
Yeah, it felt like they were basing it off of the Cloverfield paradox in a way.
Oh, okay.
What I remembered from the one time I saw that.
Yeah, because then there ended up being paradox after paradox after paradox. The first one being that Jughead ends up discovering, you know, going to Dr. Curdle and seeing his own body. So what's happening there? Uh-oh. And the Jughead body is he is clutching a comic book.
Yep, you're way ahead.
I'm sorry. I am way ahead. I'm sorry about that. And then like other paradoxes, like Cheryl saying my brother is alive, and us seeing Jason, and then in the next scene Jughead discovering the yearbook with Jason's in memoriam. So anyway, let's get back to it. I apologize.
it's Jughead's first day back teaching, and he in the bathroom he runs into Ben Button, who I had forgotten about until they explained who he was.
Totally. Also remember too, Jughead wakes up at Archie's, living at Archie's garage again, like the previous season hadn't happened. And then he's like, I sleptwalked. I think I must have sleptwalked, and I'm so sorry, Tony. And she was like, it's okay, you're stressed. And then we had a really good needle drop that probably cost a little more money than their regular needle drops, which was Don't You Forget About Me from The Breakfast Club.
Yes.
By Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. And it's just like one of the best songs of
it's
the era.
Simple Minds. Don't You Forget About Me is Simple Minds.
That is correct. I apologize. That's right. It's If You Leave, that's the one by OMD. Sorry. That's right. Don't You Forget About Me is by Simple Minds. Oh my gosh. Terrible. Terrible, Louis. I'm fired. Embarrassing. Hugely embarrassing. But it was a great needle drop to have on the show and felt like so appropriate and so great to have. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then like all of them are there back as quote unquote teachers.
I want to go back to the Ben Button scene real fast before we get to all of them as teachers.
Sure.
Because we're reminded that Ben Button was Dilton Doily's friend who sacrificed himself to the Gargoyle King.
That's right.
And they're in the bathroom and like Jughead's explaining that like he remembers him killing himself. And the kid's like, wow, that sounds like some daytime delusions are a lot of like schizophrenia. Anyway, have a great day. And
I know. Like, I loved that.
One sentence.
It was so fun and weird. I kind of loved it. It was like, it was great. So what I'm going to tell you as a secondary character is you're fucking crazy. Bye.
Like, have a great day.
Yeah, have a great day. I thought that was actually really well handled.
It was very funny.
Yeah, it was very funny. And then...
to the group, and we find out that Betty and Archie are getting married that weekend.
Yes.
Which is great. Great. Yes. Moving the plot along.
Yeah, let's just get there. Yeah.
And then Betty gets a phone call from Dr. Cola Jr. that he has Jughead's body. And Betty
and Betty's like, I'm going to make this all about me. Stop harassing me, Dr. Colonel Jr.
Yeah, Betty's like, he's just jealous that he wasn't invited to the wedding.
Yeah, that's why you'd call someone up and be like, your friend Jughead has died.
Like, yeah, which like, not only is that insane, but like, why didn't she invite him to the wedding?
Yeah,
seems like they're pretty close by now.
I know, because she's hanging out with him all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Really. He's just in his basement. He's going to end up being the killer for maybe the next season. He's going to be in his basement going crazy, listening to Josie and the Pussycats albums over and over again. He's going to come out and kill someone.
It's going to merge. The show's going to be on Showtime and they're going to change his name to Dexter. Oh, wait. I don't know the plot of Dexter, but I'm definitely merging it with 6 Feet Under in my head.
Definitely.
I did watch that. But... so we find, yeah, he shows Jughead his own body and we find that he was strangled on the Lonely Highway.
Yeah, and I do like that we're getting just sort of the usage of the Lonely Highway. Like, I did think that this episode was really good at weaving in small plot points from every other season of the show, you know, mm-hmm. which I thought was cool. Mm-hmm. Because we certainly haven't heard about the Lonely Highway since the end of the last season, you know. And then... Jughead says, keep this body on ice and under wraps. Mm-hmm. And then Jughead walks by the sign. And this was kind of fun. And on one side of the sign, it says Rivervale. And then on the other side of the sign, it said Riverdale.
Yep. And they had different slogans.
Yes, they had different slogans. Do you remember the two slogans?
Rivervale had, there's no place like home. And Riverdale had the town of pops.
Oh, interesting. Yep. Because Riverdale, the town with pops, is like they're rehabilitating the town mantra right now.
Yep.
Yeah, totally. then somehow Jughead comes into possession of a bunch of Riverdale comics.
He has Riverdale comics.
Yes, that's right. But then there's a few issues that are Riverdale that he discovers.
The last five.
Riverdale. Yes.
He said, like, issues 96, 97, 98, 99, and 100.
And then Jughead starts reading the comics. Hmm. Now, here's a big question.
From the beginning. He started reading the comics from the beginning.
Yes.
And the first issue had Zombie Archie on the front.
I did not notice that.
Except in retrospect, maybe it's Jason. Because
yeah, it was probably Jason found probably in the, Jason. Yeah, found yeah. in the, because that was the first episode of our show.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking in the moment, yeah.
Now, little question here / conjecture, where the fuck did these comic books come from? Because that's really not fully explained.
He said they were just there.
Yeah, but it's never explained as the episode goes on how these materialize, these comics that are about the characters.
They sort of explained that, like, Rivervale was created with the explosion in Riverdale.
Yeah.
So they now the dreams are making sense. So they didn't have those, none of those things that they woke up from existed. These people came to be suddenly with memories built in at that explosion point.
Yeah. Unstable pocket universe.
He doesn't really know where they came from, but like he doesn't really know where he came from in like a really weird esoteric way.
Yeah, because, okay, so just to break this down a little bit, this is a conceit that's used in DC Comics right now that it can be confusing, but I think is really fun as long as you slow it down, is that in, you know, in the DC multiverse, there's an Earth that's basically called Earth Prime. And that is a representation of our Earth, where all the superheroes only exist as comic book characters, where
Riverdale is called Riverdale Prime in this.
Yes, Riverdale is considered Riverdale Prime. So, so what that means is that there's a universe that is basically writing the stories of the rest of the universe, which is, you know, Earth Prime to the rest of the multiverse. The rest of the multiverse is being basically birthed by Earth Prime, right? The comic book writers and artists on Earth Prime. So that's a concept that, like, is a little hard to explain, but can be understood. For this, there's not really any establishment that this is, like, why... I know it's because they're comic book characters originally, like I get that, but there's no logical explanation why it's comic books. Like what would have actually been much more logical is if somebody literally like sends Jughead a message that's like, check your DVR, and it's like all of Riverdale as a TV show, and he starts watching his own TV show. You know what I mean? Like that would make more sense for like the meta narrative.
Yeah.
I don't even know if there's anything that, like, I don't know if this is too hot of it. Like, if this is even a hot take, but just, I thought it was a little sloppy that the actual conceit of them being comic books wasn't more properly explained.
Yeah. It feels like just based on their skill set, they should have gone with like almost a Logan route where like there is a person writing about real people. Like, whoever was writing the Riverdale comics is someone who doesn't live in Riverdale who's just like obsessed with them.
Who's stalking them?
Almost, because it's sort of like, well, Logan's weird because there are X-Men, but that's, he finds, the family of finds them because they were reading Wolverine comics.
Yes.
Because Wolverine was real and someone was writing like a comic book version of him as well.
Yes, which is still not fully explained within that movie. That's still a, it's still a weird part of the movie that it's like, oh, there's kids reading comics about these like real life very violent events, you know what I mean?
It feels like that, but it feels like, you know, like John Lewis wrote like a graphic novel about himself and like Persepolis, where those are about themselves, but it is like,
oh yeah, autobiographical, but those are it's not like a cartoon version of John Lewis punching people in the face, you know what I mean?
Right, but I assume there's like, it makes sense that someone would at least minimum write a book about the X-Men.
Definitely. Oh so yeah, I don't, I agree with that.
A comic book adaptation for kids because they're very real and still current.
This is my favorite episode of the show we've done so far because this is all the shit that I just want to delve into all the time with my geeky stuff, and we haven't gotten to because the show's not about this shit, but this episode is. Just want to say
bad. It is too bad Adam Sandler has never done something about this.
Adam Sandler's never done something
like timey-wimey, because I think we would have so much fun.
Yes, absolutely.
I guess we should talk about Click.
So then it seems like Jughead's in some sort of like comics loop. Mm-hmm. And the first 95 issues, as you said, are Riverdale, and then something happens. There's an explosion. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Rivervale comics.
Yeah. And he sees the page of him reading a page of him reading a page of him reading a page like infinitely. So he sees himself reading the comics.
Yes, that's right. And that was great. That was a great scene, and it was weird and creepy.
Yeah, that's kind of what you're waiting for in an episode like this.
Absolutely. Is that shot. It was very smart. Yeah. And then he has Tabitha read all the comics. Mm-hmm. And something that I really appreciate about this episode, and I feel like it actually played it pretty much to the top of these characters' intelligence, is we didn't have to dwell on these characters having a major freak out about reading about themselves. Instead, they were just like, what is happening here? Can we figure this out together? And I actually liked that more than if they had gone that route. You know what
it
I mean?
It feels like, like the same in the Mr. Cypher episode where everyone was just like immediately on board that the devil was real.
Yeah, they were like, oh, the devil, cool. Okay, moving on. Yeah, and that was actually more fun.
Yeah, them truly yes-anding.
Yes. So Archie doesn't remember the explosion.
And then he remembers that he dreamt about it.
Yes. Yes. And then he was like, that's just a dream, Jug. I don't understand.
And then we have a quick scene where we find that Hiram is never in Rivervale because he died before Veronica's quinceañera.
Yeah. And Veronica had to, she was so distraught, she had to cancel her Jonas Brothers performance.
I know.
It's very sad. But this was a great explanation for why Rivervale feels so different than Riverdale, because it's a world of the show where they haven't relied on Hiram as a plot crutch for the last fucking six seasons of this fucking show. So yeah. So that was great.
And then we get the cameo that I didn't know about, that was so excited about. And I really love that they did this.
Yeah.
Is they brought back Ross Butler and they had both Reggies.
And that was such a fun, silly treat and felt like a sitcom.
It felt like, yeah, like when they got new Becky on Roseanne and everyone was just like, you look different.
Yep, new Becky on Roseanne, or like if the two Darrens from Bewitched end up meeting, you know?
Yeah.
This was awesome. This was definitely a highlight of the episode. And seeing the two actors interact was hysterical. It was great.
And they had so much fun with it, and it's the right character. I mean, it just happened to be Reggie, but it was lucky for it to be Reggie.
Yes.
Because Reggie's so fun to work with stuff like that.
Yes, absolutely.
It was so fun to have both Reggies.
Yeah, it was an absolute treat. I completely agree.
And then we find out that Jason is alive.
Yeah, but I just want to note, because this is great. This was Cheryl's big scene in the episode. Mm-hmm. And she is going off. The language is excellent. It's good Cheryl language. And she calls the comic that Jughead shows her a horrid pamphlet, which is amazing. It's just worth noting. It's such good verbiage for a comic book. I see your horrid pamphlet.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is the first episode of the entire series where Jason has lines.
I think we saw him speak once before in like a flashback. He never spoke.
Never.
Good for this actor.
Isn't that fun?
I love this for him.
Yeah.
Is he in anything else? I'm going to look.
I know. We should look him up.
He's in stuff. Let's see. Oh, no, stop. Leave me alone. I hate the pop-up on IMDb. All right. Looks like just a bunch of like Hallmark movies.
Well, at least he's getting some work, you know?
Yeah. Including a TV show called Wrong Hole. It's a web series. Oh, I bet it is what it sounds like then. Oh, bummer.
Well, I hope he gets more work because we love him.
Good for him. And then Cheryl mentions that they're twins again.
Yes.
And I think sometimes they're twins and sometimes they're not.
Yes. In this episode, they are twins. Mm-hmm. But then Jughead goes and checks it out, and the memoriam page is there.
In the yearbook,
So something very strange is happening in Rivervale.
Yeah.
And then we get the awesome act break where other Reggie pops in. That's when pops in. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Before was that Reggie was confused because Reggie in the comics didn't look like him.
Exactly. Which is also so funny.
So we come back and Jughead is told that in order to figure this out, he has to go talk to the physics teacher, Dilton Doily.
And it's like, wait, what? Oh my gosh.
Who is apparently an expert on time paradoxes. So of course he is teaching at a small public school.
He's also an expert on not having nice hair in this episode.
No.
Which is really disappointing because I think that actor is so cute and I really didn't like his hair.
He's not cute in this ep.
Yeah, I agree.
There was a lot in this episode where I was hoping people would be cuter.
Yes, truth. I agree with that. I thought both Reggies were very cute, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we find out that he has a teaching assistant.
Yes, at a high school.
Bonkers. And it's Ethel. I thought when they flashed to Ethel, I thought she was going to be the chemistry teacher because she was working with Bunsen burners.
Yeah.
And then nope, it's just they're using Bunsen burners in physics.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, because you need to boil a lot of shit when it comes to physics class. Anyway. Yeah. But it was once again fun to see that actor again.
Yeah, and he does explain that this is more of an anomaly than a paradox.
Yes.
Which I think he's right.
Yes, I do believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more of an anomaly than a paradox. Yes.
Yeah, because a paradox has to work in, like, against each other, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not.
But then Dilton explains the Jughead has become aware of this happening for a reason. Mm-hmm. And this I really appreciate as a fan of Jughead and as a fan of the comics, is there's always been a element to Jughead, and we've talked about this on the show before, where he's slightly above the narrative of the traditional Archie comics, and he mm-hmm. often serves as a little more of a commentator on them, just in the fact that Archie, it's really, you know, these romance comedies, right? And Jughead's like, I'm not involved with this. I've got my own thing going on. You guys do what you want. So this is, I think, actually a smart take on that. So mm-hmm. I appreciated that. I like that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And it becomes, the Jughead self-awareness becomes so fun later.
It does. Very, 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 very fun.
So they start talking, the Reggies and Veronica are talking about going to bachelor and bachelorette parties, and then
Reggie calls himself Reggie Prime, which is great,
right? Because only new Reggie is invited.
That's right.
But old Reggie wants to get involved with the bachelorette party.
Yes,
that is not even trying not to be a Magic Mike reference.
No, in no way is it trying to be a Magic Mike reference, except it's 100% a Magic Mike reference.
The cop uniform.
Yeah,
it's, and just, let me tell you, I'm, like, a big Magic Mike fan. Like, the first movie as, like, cinema, like, it's a Soderbergh movie. And then the second one is a fun road trip movie, which is what the second one is what everyone thought the first one was going to be.
Yes.
And I love both of them. And I don't find them as, like, hot, sexy movies. Like, that's not my take on Magic Mike. But, and I don't think Channing Tatum is that attractive, but Channing Tatum can dance.
Like, yes, so he's a wonderful dancer. Absolutely.
Yeah, like old Reggie, it felt like there was no rhythm, and maybe he had never heard the song Pony before, which is impossible.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Like, yeah, it was, or maybe they hadn't gotten the rights to Pony yet, and they used some other song.
Yeah, so he was dancing something else, and then they imposed Pony by Genuine.
They put Pony in there, yeah, because that scene felt pretty messy. It felt like that guy just gyrating around. It was very silly.
Yeah.
And then we get this scene with Archie, which is the beginning of there being something wrong, where he thinks his dad is going to somehow show up at the wedding and he's expecting it.
Yeah.
But you know what I really appreciated? I really appreciated, after some of the films that I've seen lately, that this, I was very worried they were going to go the route where we were going to see some sort of scary digital Jason Priestley, and the fact that they weave this into the plot. Luke Perry. Oh my fucking God. Am I saying Jason Priestley? Thinks that somehow Luke Perry will show up for the wedding. Dead Luke Perry.
What a
letter. Edit that out, Angelie.
I think you said it before that Jason Priestley would be the best replacement though.
We have said that on the show. Yes. Okay, edit all that out, Angie. I'm going to take that again. I'm going to do another take of that. So somehow Archie thinks that Luke Perry is going to show up at the wedding, which is, you know, really weird and demented. And it made me worried, because after some of the films and TV shows that I've seen lately, I was really worried for digital Luke Perry to show up. And the fact that that wasn't what they did with this, I thought was really nice and smart. Yeah. Anyway. And then we had this scene that was definitely Cammy Mendez being like, I'm going to try my hardest to get through this.
Yeah.
Where she completely randomly decides she wants to sleep with both Reggies. Mm-hmm. What did you think about that?
It felt like they had to have the scene. Like,
it why?
Felt like, it felt like if they didn't have it, then, like, what's the point? Like, I think they just, like, wanted to use these two as much as they could, and that's, like, the logical next step.
Yes.
But it didn't, it's clear, it also, at the same time, is, like, such an easy scene to, of course, put in.
Yes. Yeah.
That, like, why give it everything? Everyone's, like, about to fast forward it because they, like, know that it's there.
Also, it wasn't realistic to me because what I think would have happened is both Reggies would have said yes, and then they would have kicked Ronnie out of the bed and kept going with each other because they're clearly major narcissists, the two of them, right?
Yeah. If you're not, it is like an interesting prospect.
Yes.
So,
and then Veronica's like, I'm more woman for both of you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. And then everyone's kind of hungover, and we find out that Jason's been kidnapped by the Black Hood.
Uh-oh, Black Hood's back. Trouble.
Black Hood's back again.
Yeah. Guess who's black? Black Hood's back. Black Hood's back. But then immediately they go save him.
Right, because Jughead knows exactly where he is, and Tom immediately believes that.
Yes.
And they
They figure it out very quickly. They shoot the Black Hood immediately. And guess who's under that hood? This time, Clifford Blossom.
Oh, I thought you were going to come up with like a good not truth.
Richard Kind.
There we go.
Is that better?
Yeah. Beloved character actor
Richard Kind. Yeah, is under the hood. Finally, at last. Just finally, to appease both of us. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. It's Cliff Blossom.
So then Veronica grounds the two Reggies, which is actually hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's like, you two boys work this out.
Very fun.
Very, very, very fun scene. And then we have a scene, we have this scene where Lachlan Monroe gets to be nice.
He's a good dad in this one. Yep. He and Alice are toasting for the wedding.
Yep. And him and Alice are together and everything's fine.
And then Tony comes in and everyone immediately knows that there's something wrong.
Yes.
Immediately.
Yes.
Like, she wouldn't be there if everything was okay. Like, she wasn't invited.
Yeah. Why would you invite Tony Topaz? You know that Tony, she drinks too much and she eats all the crudité. Tony Topaz. Yeah. And it's that Cheryl has been strangled, which is very sad, and also feels pretty high stakes, which is good for this episode. And then we get this awesome, really, really, really fun Bughead scene, which I think is great, you know, where they're solving a mystery and we haven't gotten to see them do this in a while. So I appreciated this. Jughead thinks he knows what's going on and decides he's going to take action. So then he goes back to Dilton. And Dilton wants to see all of reality implode in order just to, because he thinks he's going to be removed from it. Like, isn't he going to die?
His reasoning was that, like, if he, like, this is like the experiment. If he follows through, he gets to write the paper. He gets to be the first author to cover reality, to cover it, because they're going to implode Rivervale. But if he is existing in Rivervale and he is the first author to write this, it won't exist anymore.
That's correct. There's
no point in writing it up.
That's what I was thinking during the scene. And, you know, I get that this is like really crazy logic, but this is a little too much. You know what I mean? Like, in terms of the logic. Yeah. But luckily, Ethel poisoned Dilton.
Now, I thought, when he started foaming at the mouth, I thought that the universes were converging.
That's what I thought as well. And I thought that that was actually a missed opportunity to make that a plot point. Because if they're going to start dying in the same ways that they died in Riverdale, it would make sense that there was going to be some sort of weird implosion that was happening. I completely agree.
A full convergence, but it wasn't. It's not a bummer.
Yeah, it agreed. It was somewhat sloppy. But both Reggies have died because they have killed each other.
Yes.
Which was also great. Love it.
Yes. Monica's mad because they like straight up dueled.
Yep. She's frustrated by it. She's perturbed. She's like, oh, those boys, RIP. Yeah.
And so it's determined that they have to explode, do this, like recreate the explosion in Rivervale that was in Riverdale.
And then there's a big laundry list of things that created Rivervale that are very silly and fun, but silly. There is an explosion while sex was happening and while Jughead was writing. And obviously, if those three things happen together, you create an unstable pocket universe.
But the thing is that they decided, they're like, well, Betty and Archie are about to get married. We should hold it until after the wedding. That doesn't make sense.
No, absolutely. Like, you want to save the universe so that Betty and Archie have a good life, you know?
Yeah, it's about to stop existing. Like, they won't know that they didn't have a wedding because they won't exist.
Exactly, because they're going to disappear.
It's so dumb. And then so Betty and Jughead are like, I guess we gotta make out. Oh no, yeah. Veronica and Jughead are like, I guess we gotta kiss.
Yes. Yes. Why aren't, is it because they don't want Betty to be cheating? They don't want to be. Yeah, that's why. They don't want Betty or Archie to be cheating. So that's why it's Jughead and Veronica.
They decide it's Jughead and Veronica because they want Betty and Archie to be able to have their wedding as though they're not going to notice that Jughead and Veronica aren't there.
That's right. Yes. Thank you. But then this, and this is nice. Jughead does this nice description of all the things that are the show. Mm-hmm. And I liked it. And I thought it was lovely. And it was nice writing on RAS's part, and I appreciated it with the amount with the amount of time we've sunk into this show.
Yeah.
Hearing Jughead say all that out loud.
Yeah.
And then Veronica says, here's to Vughead becoming canon, which I also appreciated as being very fun fan service.
Mm-hmm. And then so we come back from the act break.
Yes.
And we find Archie comes bursting in instead of Veronica.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, because you would notice if your best man wasn't there.
Yes.
And then it turns out also that Veronica is dead.
Yes.
And that Archie killed her.
Yes.
Because Archie is the Scranton Strangler.
And I like this. Yes, Archie is the Scranton Strangler. And I like this because I've wanted to see Archie as the villain for a while and thought KJ would do well with this. And he does. He does very well with this.
And his explanation is that he wants Rivervale to continue because it's fine for him to strangle these people to not get Rivervale gone because people keep coming back to life.
Yes.
And he wants his father to come back. And KJ's delivery here was so fucking good.
It was wonderful. And it also was a really good, he did really good work keeping it grounded when the emotions were there and the sentiment about him wanting his father to come back is very, very smart and very beautiful, considering, you know, that we lost Luke Perry and it was so untimely and very sad. But then there was also a bunch of gobbledygook in that explanation as well, which made no sense and was never really explained. Yeah. Like, this version of Archie apparently somehow witnessed the birth of this pocket universe.
And because he was in the explosion.
Because he was in the explosion, but that's fine. But how was this knowledge imparted into this character that these were the rules of the world and the logic and this is what was happening? Like, why, even if he was in the explosion, how would he have known more than anybody else? Like, this isn't the Riverdale version of Archie somehow has been flung across to this parallel universe. Does that make sense? Like, this is still a different version of the character.
I think he started putting together that, like, there's two, that, like, there is that dead Jughead body, and then here's Jughead. And Jughead keeps saying Dilton died, and then here's Dilton.
Mm-hmm.
So I think his thinking was, like, Jughead keeps saying my dad is dead, and I feel like my dad is dead, but it seems like there is a universe where my dad is back because we keep creating these pocket universes.
I will take it. I think it's still kind of convoluted, but I
don't think it's what they were thinking, but we want to logic this out for them.
Yes, we're trying our best, yeah, to do that, exactly.
And then they start to fight. And
which I, once again, thought was super fun. I liked seeing that scene. Like, I thought it was pretty exciting after all the stuff we've seen these two characters do together on the show.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool. And then Betty shoots Archie in the head, which also is fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's because Bughead is completely endgame. Come on. Let's be real here.
Yeah.
That's what needs to happen at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm. And then so Betty and Jughead are like, all right, I guess we got a bone until there's an explosion.
But then guess who comes in? Other narrator, Jughead.
Which I love that he describes himself as narrator Jughead.
Yeah, he's narrator Jughead. That's who he is. He's narrator Jughead. Yeah. And I also liked that there was an audible record scratch when he came in.
Yes. And he's wearing like this whole Rivervale thing. Narrator Jughead's been wearing like a suit.
Yeah.
And so this is like the very specific narrative Jughead entering the scene.
Yeah, that we've seen. Yeah. So it crosses that fourth wall in a cool way. And also, just because this is probably the last time we're going to get to see him, those clothes they picked out for Cole are so cool. And I just loved his look for him as the narrator. I thought it was really good. Kudos to the wardrobe. You know, that's one of the best things about this show overall is when wardrobe gets it right, they nail it. And that was such a great combo for that actor and for that character. Loved it. That's all.
So he explains that he did come back from the dead, like Archie was insinuating. And yes. He came from that great Pops in the Sky.
Yes. Now this was fun. So the version of Pops he comes from was at the very least, I wouldn't say that it was the actual comic book world of Archie Comics, but it was like a facsimile tribute to it. And in terms of the perspective of the characters, I was thinking about this today. In terms of the perspective of the characters and sort of what a grueling amount of scary trauma the Riverdale characters or the Rivervale characters have had to go through in this series. Yes, if their afterlife was just like an Archie comedy comic, yeah, that actually is a reasonable facsimile of an afterlife for where they're at, where it's just like, it's our lives, but nothing fucking awful happens. And the choices you have to make are very simple, you know? And
they're playing the original version of Sugar Sugar.
Yeah, it was the first needle drop we've heard of Sugar Sugar on the show, which is a great save for, you know, the first version of it that we heard was in episode 1, and to hear it again in episode 100 is a real treat.
Yeah.
You know, and Sugar Sugar, talked about it on the show before, but it's just one of the best songs ever written. And it just is so immediately evocative with its like first few bars that we heard. It was like, okay, we get what kind of world this is, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And then the costumes in the scene, super fun.
Yes.
Once again, very angry. We didn't get to see Moose in a tiny bowler hat.
Yeah. We see Kevin canoodling with fangs.
Yes.
Nice to see again, but I would have liked Moose.
Moose canoodling with Kevin instead? Yeah, absolutely.
Or Moose with fangs again, because that's the last time we saw Moose was with fangs.
Yes, that's true. Sort of blurry and in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Jughead in this Great Pops in the Sky figures out how the energy source that fuels Rivervale, which is so dumb and so wonderful.
Yeah, imagination.
It's imaginative, like honest to God, because it feels like a joke we would tell.
It does actually.
But it is truly what came out of Cole Sprouse's mouth was that Riverdale runs on imagination.
Which is true. Riverdale is magic. Riverdale's pure magic. You know, capture that Riverdale magic and take it home on October 24th when Lady and the Tramp is going to be finally released on home video. Right? Riverdale is the world of imagination. It's wonderful.
Experience the magic at home.
Yeah. My apologies for lapsing into Carol Channing voice, but I feel like that's where we're going with this.
Yeah.
Riverdale, imagination. It's about imagination, darling. Anyway, but then something that happens is kind of fun. This kind of positions Jughead to be like basically the way he's been narrating every single episode of the show. It actually makes him into the writer of the show in canon, which is actually really fun and cool.
Yeah. Yeah. To explain this is they decide that the way to keep both universes is for River Dale Jughead to fuel Rivervale. Is that the way it went?
No.
It felt like it should be the opposite way, but this Jughead that we've been seeing is like what
Okay, this is how I interpreted it, because this was the confusing ending that kind of pissed us off, right? Mm-hmm. Is that it was Rivervale Jughead who ended up in the bunker,
mm-hmm.
but he created a whole other version of Jughead to exist with them in Rivervale. But then there was the original Rivervale version of Jughead, not Riverdale version of Jughead, Rivervale version of Jughead, who is going to be isolated forever. And then he wrote the story basically into a loop.
Okay.
Yeah, he wrote the story into a loop so that it sort of keeps happening over and over again and they can exist in this pocket world. But I mean, that's fine. And we'll probably never hear from this plot line again. But I think that there's really cool seeds in there if they did ever want to bring him back, that something happens where he goes completely insane in the bunker doing that for the rest of eternity, you know, and that we see this like incredibly unhinged version of the character that starts playing God. And, you know, that could be sort of a sequel to this episode at some point. Mm-hmm. Because that's a bad sitch for anybody to be in the bunker for the rest of your life, just writing on that typewriter, you know?
Yeah.
But maybe that version of Jughead loves it because all he really wants to do is write. So I get it. Mm-hmm. And it also means that Jughead and Betty are the ones that save the universe. And I kind of feel like after all is said and done, that this is the trick of Riverdale I would argue it really is primarily Jughead and Betty's story, entire series, more than any mm-hmm. other characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we have then Jughead goes to where the bomb is about to go off again.
Yes.
And because stops Archie and Betty
mm-hmm.
and is like, get out of here, Betty, you know how to defuse a bomb, of course.
Yes.
Betty forgets, but Jughead remembers.
Yes, exactly.
Which
is almost a commentary on the fact that they just have I think that's a joke that they made that's like, I have the characters going willy-nilly.
Because also, Betty does not defuse the bomb.
No.
It goes off, but she's out of the house.
Yeah, they run out of the house.
And it goes off, and I thought this was interesting. So it goes off while one Jughead is in the garage working. And it does the thing bombs do where everything goes quiet and then you get the really high-pitched sound because that's how movies let you know. But if I recall correctly, Jughead, before they started filming, was supposed to be a deaf character.
Jughead was supposed to be a dead character?
Deaf. With an F.
Oh, deaf character.
Yeah.
I thought you said dead character. I was like, what?
Nope. Deaf.
So Jughead was supposed to be deaf, you mean?
Before they cast Cole Sprouse.
They were thinking of having Jughead be deaf. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think they were. And then Cole Sprouse came in and they were like, let's just, because no one else is famous.
Yes.
They were like, actually, let's just take this guy.
Let's just take Cole. That's interesting because, that's very, I didn't know that they were planning on writing Jughead as deaf. It's interesting to me because basically what Jughead in the comics had been really kind of refined in a very, very smart way over the few years before Riverdale started. We talked about this a lot. Like they made him mm-hmm. asexual, which was cool for representation. I think him being deaf is a really cool version of the character as well. And then instead they just like made him basically the most generic version of the character of all time for Riverdale.
This one is weird. He's a weirdo.
Well, he's always been weird. That's like,
have you ever seen him without his stupid hat?
I have not. That is fair. I guess that's weird. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. But they get out, and then we're left with sort of the aftermath once again of the explosion. Mm-hmm. And what's going to be really interesting with the rest of the season when we resume in March is how have they folded in elements of Rivervale into this Riverdale continuity that now exists? Mm-hmm. Probably not as much as we would like them to. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, my wish is that these few episodes have been mad fun. And we, of course, have been critical because it's our job and you know, silly. And we've criticized them for the stuff that makes no sense, which is our job. But really, how much fun have these five been comparatively?
Oh, I'm so glad we got them.
Yeah, they were.
Might have another like 1 3/4 season. I'm glad we had this.
They were a real gift. But what I'm hoping is that the writers and the producers of the show look at what worked for these five episodes, and perhaps that carries into the rest of this series. Mm-hmm. Because I wouldn't mind if the show ended up moving at a brisker pace, which these episodes did, and had more of a sense of anything could happen. And sort of there was a joy to these episodes that I really appreciated.
Yeah.
We needed a longer Sabrina cameo, though. Fuck that. So who's on your power list?
Number one was Jughead, because sure, he powered the whole episode with his imagination.
Yes.
And then I put Archie because he was the strangler. And then that's all I had. Can you jump in? I don't know.
I have one more, and it's Betty.
Okay.
Yeah. Who's on your crush list?
I have new Reggie.
Uh-huh.
Fangs. And I can't tell what I wrote. I think I wrote cute Jughead, which is the narrator Jughead.
I have Jughead as well in all his incarnations, especially Whoopi hat wearing Jughead. Because, I mean, we just see him in that crown so rarely, and it's the best how big they've made it. It's insane. It's like, it's not what those hats look like IRL at all, but I guess it's what they look like in the comics. It's fine. And then I have cute little Ben Button. Pop it in there. And then also I have Hal. Nice Hal. Nice Hal.
Also, I of course want to give a shout out to perennial favorite Zaddy Keller, who we didn't get a close-up on.
Yes, but at least was in this episode.
Yes.
So we don't know what the next episode's called.
No, but
because now we're on our hiatus until March.
Yep. Early March,
but you know, we'll probably pop in here and there and do some funsy episodes about some stuff over the next few months. And you know, thanks for everybody that's been sticking with us, especially for this sort of mini season we just did. We do appreciate it. Kate's laughing, but we appreciate it, and we appreciate all the listenership and everything.
We can't believe you're still here.
I can, because this is a very high quality podcast. Thanks to our editor Angeli Mercado, who rocks, and we love her.
And our theme song writer Louis Aronowitz, who did a real great job 3 or 4 years ago.
Exactly. And we'll thank him in every episode until we get a new theme song or, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm Louis Perlman.
I'm Kate Batter.
Bye.